Hi everyone online. I see messages popping up. That's perfect. Thank you very much. Okay. Hi everyone online. Hi Casey. Hi Scott. Michael. Colin. Benjamin. Beck. Ryan and Casey. Tessa. Jose. Simran. Hello. Mike. Neverleen. Ahmed, all sorts of other people. Thanks for joining from all over the world. So, yeah, we'll start off with some chanting and then we'll do some meditation and there'll be a short tea break and then we'll get into the Dharma talk. So, hi. I mean, I can sit there, you guys can do the thing. It's fine. Okay, so has everyone got chanting sheets? Who needs chanting sheets? Great.
Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Namo tassa bhagavato arahato sammasambuddhassa. Buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Dutiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi buddhaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi dhammaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Tatiyampi sanghaṃ saraṇaṃ gacchāmi. Iti piso bhagava arahaṃ sammā sambuddho. Vijja charana sampanno sugato lokavidu. Anuttaro purisa dhamma sarati. Satta deva manusanam buddho bhagavati. Svakato bhagavata dhammo sanditiko vakaliko ehipasiko upanayiko. Pajjatang vedita bovinyuhiti. Supatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho. Ujjupatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho. Nyayapatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho. Samichipatipanno bhagavato savaka sangho. Yadidam chattari purisa yugani. Atha purisa pukkala. Esa bhagavato savaka sangho. Pahuneyo pahuneyo dakineyo anjali karaniyo. Anuttaram punyaketam lokasati. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Okay, so of all of the things that you could have chosen to do tonight, you have chosen to come here. And no one was coerced, right? I mean, like, you know, just wiggle your head a little bit and I'll come and rescue later if that was the case. But I think you probably came here on your own volition. Your friends or partners did not drag you along, hopefully. Okay, good. So we're here for a reason. To grow in wholesome qualities, right? Does that sound good? Great. And one of the ways that we can do that is through practicing meditation. And those wholesome qualities, they're already there, right inside of you. I know at least half of you, and they're there, whether you like it or not. And so this is what we're trying to do as Buddhist practitioners and as meditators is practice bhavana. We're cultivating the soil of our mind and growing our qualities of peace and contentment and stillness and gentleness. And if there are any of those pesky defilement weeds, we can do a little bit of weeding as well. But mostly we can just let the sun shine and we'll water the flowers and not the weeds while we meditate, to quote Ajahn Brahm. And so if we keep this kind of attitude in mind, if we keep kind of the pace that nature moves at rather than the pace that Sydney's moving at out there, then we'll be able to see the benefit of our meditation, right? And so what kind of meditation shall we do tonight?
Metta.
Okay.
Something that can alleviate headaches.
Something that can alleviate headaches. Gentle metta. Gentle metta. No, I think metta can be good for headaches, and hydration can be good for headaches. So please make sure that you're well hydrated before you meditate. It makes a real difference, actually. Like, I know this. Yeah, if you're at the end of the week already and you're all very tired and you are not well hydrated, right? It's a thing. So, okay. So we can do some metta. So just taking a little bit of time to settle into the room and put down all the other choices that are out there in the world, all of them. And just notice what your body feels like right now. Maybe you're just carrying a little bit of the busyness from the week. It's okay. It's pretty normal. We're all conditioned beings. Just noticing what that feels like, and then feeling the body sinking into the seat, like there are roots in your tailbones sinking into the ground, feeling your feet connecting with the earth. You might need to have a wriggle just so that you're in the most comfortable and alert position you can be. And uncurling and softening your toes and your feet. Bringing all your kindness and gentleness to your feet. They've done such a good job for you today, getting you around. And you can give them some awareness and some kindness and gratitude. And coming up the legs to the thighs. Spreading that attitude of kindness and gentleness. Not trying to control or change anything. Bringing the kind of kindness that just wants things to be happy the way they are. Soft, gentle attitude. Coming up to the knees. Sometimes I imagine them just expanding out like there's a ball inside and it's opening up. Allowing them to blossom, soften, relax. Feeling the big, powerful muscles of your thighs. Giving them a Buddha smile. And maybe you can even just gently stroke over them with your mind. And then feeling that connection with the seat. Feeling the breath come all the way down and allowing it to just open and soften the hips and the pelvis, letting go of any tension or protecting that we've been doing during the day. Knowing that we're in a safe place. Where everyone's welcome. And so we can relax the abdomen. Let each of the vertebrae just stack on top of each other in a way that the body knows is best. Bringing some kindness and gentleness to the muscles around the shoulder blades and the armpits. Letting the arms hang from the shoulders and the wrists hang, the hands hang from the wrists. And shining the light of mindfulness and the warmth of kindness through your arms and your hands. Then coming back up to the neck, the base of the throat, and the base of the skull. May they be happy and soft and gentle. There's no need to talk right now. So you can relax your throat. Bring a soft Buddha smile to your lips. There's no need to smell right now. So you can give your nose the next little while off. There's no need to see right now. So you can tuck your eyes in with the soft, gentle blankets of your eyelids and let them rest. And there's no need to think right now. So you can soften the area around your forehead and your skull. Thank your mind for all its work that it's been doing. And then you can just notice what a relaxed body feels like. And then when you're ready, when you're ready, you can bring up the phrase of metta in your mind very clearly. May I be happy. May I be happy. That simple, pure, bright intention. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. Just picking it up very gently again and again. and recognizing the meaning and the intention behind the words. May I be happy. May I be happy. And bringing that intention to a feeling in your body, somewhere in your stomach or your chest. Just bringing that soft, gentle feeling of loving kindness. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. Planting the seeds of metta in your heart. May I be happy. May I be happy. Shining the light of awareness on that little seed of metta so that it can grow. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. And as that feeling of metta starts to take root, allow it to blossom throughout your body, feeling that soft, gentle feeling of unconditional loving kindness, that simple wish to be happy right now. May I be happy. May I be happy. May I be happy. Allowing that feeling to brighten, spread all the way through the body. If there's any sticking places, just move on. Trying to maintain that simple, beautiful feeling of metta
by bringing up the feeling and the phrase of metta again and again. May I be happy. And as we come towards the end of the meditation, reflecting back, how do you feel right now compared to when we started out? And looking into cause and effect. What made the flower of metta grow? What made the weeds grow? And we can bring our mind back to a cool, clear place, putting down that feeling of metta, and let our body feel open, aware, and normal. You can store that little seed of metta away in the heart for another time. And with that open, clear, and expansive mind, we can dedicate the merits of this session. May all beings be happy. May all beings be well. May all beings realize the highest peace, Nibbana. Okay, so it's tea time here. So people at home, you can grab yourself a cuppa as well, and we'll be back in a few minutes. So, I seem to have landed both dark weeks, but don't worry.
It is dark week.
It is, but this week it's dark and bright week. Okay.
I'm trying to interject. We had a slight conversation about this just now.
Oh, great. So, we're going to discuss dark and bright actions with dark and bright results. And some of you who have been in the sitter class will be a little bit familiar with this, but when I suggested this as a topic when I was talking with Bhante Sujato, he said it might be a good follow-on from the discussion you all had about truth the other week. So hopefully we can tease out a few things. I've got a few suttas that we can look at very quickly. And we can figure out exactly what these things are. So I will start with the beginning of the sutta. If my phone hasn't made it disappear. Great. So this idea, I'm on the wrong sutta. this idea of the four kinds of karma, and we'll get into exactly what karma is in a little bit, appears in a number of suttas in the Anguttara Fours. No surprises there. So the Anguttara Nikaya contains numerical lists of teachings. So they're for the people who can only remember the outlines, right? If you're the kind of person who's like, I can remember that it's on page 60, but I can't remember all the details, Anguttara Nikaya is for you. Hopefully you can remember a few more details than that. So this also appears in the Majjhima Nikaya, in the aesthetic that acted like a dog sutta. So we did that a few months ago now at Rhonda Place as well. So, but this is a nice abridged version, which just gives us the outline of the four kinds of karma. Mendicants, I declare these four kinds of deeds, having realized them with my own insight. What for? There are dark deeds with dark results, bright deeds with bright results, dark and bright deeds with dark and bright results, and neither dark nor bright deeds with neither dark nor bright results, which lead to the ending of deeds. And what are deeds with dark results? It's when someone makes hurtful choices by way of body, speech, and mind. These are called dark deeds with dark results. And what are bright deeds with bright results? It's when someone makes pleasing choices with by way of body, speech, and mind. These are called bright deeds with bright results. And it's interesting, the word that Bhante Sujato has translated as pleasing throughout these suttas is abhyabhajang, which also can mean like unhostile, or so you can kind of understand it in that way as well. And or like, oh, what did I write down earlier? Unoppressive, that's right. That was what it literally translates to, unoppressive, right? So not causing harm, not putting people down. We'll do this in more detail in a second. So, and what are bright deeds? What are dark and bright deeds with dark and bright results? It's when someone makes both hurtful and unhurtful, pleasing choices by way of body, speech, and mind. These are called dark and bright deeds with dark and bright results. And what are neither dark nor bright deeds with neither dark nor bright results, which lead to the ending of deeds? Right view, right purpose, right speech, right action, right livelihood, right effort, right mindfulness, and right immersion. These are called neither dark nor bright deeds with neither dark nor bright results, which lead to the ending of deeds. These are the four kinds of deeds that I declare, having realized them with my own insight. Okay, so that's the sutta I thought that we'd kind of base the discussion around. Firstly, deeds is the word that Bhante Sujato is translating as karma. There are all sorts of crazy ideas about karma in our modern society. It's probably in the, I think it definitely is in like the English dictionary, right? One of my non-Buddhist friends was like, someone they disliked got COVID and they went, oh, well, that's their karma. I'm like, right? How many times have we wanted to weaponize karma, right? Yes. Yeah, so there's, you know, and I think some of the ideas from karma come from other Indian traditions, which are a little bit different from the way that Buddhism understands karma, right? And so this is kind of what's behind the idea that Bhante Sujato has translated karma as deeds, and I would normally translate karma even as actions, right? and so they're intentional things that we do, which create results, right? They're things generated from us. Karma is not an account-keeping system up in the sky dishing out COVID and right, all those other things, right? It's if you get karma, it's if you get COVID, it's probably because you performed an action of hanging around someone with COVID, right? It's the Buddhist idea of karma is just about cause and effect, right? And so it's interesting. I don't think I've got this sutta up, right? But the, you know, we talk about kind of karma that ripens in our lifetime and that we can see directly through the choices that we've made, right? And the karma that we're really interested in is the karma that carries over from this life until the next life, right? And sometimes it doesn't even ripen in the next life, right? We could actually have karma that ripens like another life onwards. We could be so unaware of our good karma or so deluded by, oh, yeah, I didn't do anything bad, that it might not ripen for a little while and then it catches up with you, but it will catch up with you, right? Because everything that we do influences how we incline our mind, right? So if you start hanging around with good people and you start practicing meditation, then you want to hang around more with good people. You want to hopefully do a little bit more meditation, right? You start to kind of incline in that direction. But there's a story, I think it's in the Jatakas. It's one that Ajahn Brahm tells a lot. And it's about an elephant. And it was like the king's royal elephant. It was the best behaved elephant. It was really well trained and it would do all, you know, it would perform perfectly. It would do all the things that the elephant trainer wanted it to do. And then all of a sudden it started behaving badly. And so the king went to the monks and was like, solve my problems. I mean, nothing's changed in 2,500 years. We're experts on cars now rather than elephants. you have to listen to my talk from Wednesday night at Meta Center to understand the whole story behind that. But anyway, so the monk came to the monastery and decided, well, I'm going to hang out for the night around the elephant stable and I'm going to observe what the elephant gets up to, you know, what are the conditions, right? Because we're understanding everything's conditioned, right? Our behavior doesn't come out of nowhere. And so it got late into the night and the moon came up and he heard voices, drunken voices, swearing, plotting to rob the houses around the village. And there was this gang hanging out behind the elephant stables and they'd use this, like, who'd want to hang around? What kind of good people want to hang around an elephant stable, right? So they thought this is a great place to hang out. And so eventually the elephant was influenced by these bandits who were hanging out and started to become the bad elephant, right? So even elephants, like, they pick up on bad habits, let alone us if we hang around, like, our relatives who swear for a while, right? Like, you may have stopped swearing. You might, like, have just given that up because it's a bit coarse. But if you hang out with those people in those situations, then it can happen again. Even think about when you go home to your family after you haven't hung out with them for a while and they're an okay family. But you all fall back into those old patterns again, right? It's that conditioning. It runs deep. Now you can see if it runs like that over this kind of amount of time, that stuff could easily run into your next life, right? It's tough. So karma is the result, actions and the result of actions of our intentional, from our intentional choices, right? And so what are bright deeds? Keeping the five precepts is listed as some of the bright deeds that you can do, right? They are, and the five precepts really fall into this idea of actions that we've made intentionally. So if you were to take the five precepts, right, you say, like for the first precept, panatipata ve ramani sikkhapadang samadhiyami, right? And the sikkhapadang samadhiyami is I undertake the training. It's a choice. Y'all choose it. You choose to keep it, hopefully. And it's an ethical choice that then directs the way that your life goes, right? So whichever of those precepts you keep, they have a flow-on effect on your life, right? You become a safer person for other beings to be around if you choose to keep the first precept, right? If you choose to keep the second precept, then people can leave their handbags and phones and whatever else lying around and they know it's perfectly fine, right? If you choose to keep the third precept, then people trust you and don't think that you're going to like do something dodgy with them, right? You're not the kind of person who has the reputation of being a bit sleazy, for example, right? These are the kinds of things. Like the third precept is all about consent. It's about having consenting relationships, sexual and physical relationships with people. So if you're the kind of safe kind of person to be around, then people of all genders will be happy to hang out with you, right? The precept about lying, I think this is one we're going to probably end up getting into a little bit, right? Lying is muddy waters. Speech is muddy waters, right? All four kinds of right speech are murky. And we're going to get into the murkiness in a second, right? And then intoxicants, right? These are all choices that you choose to make because they have bright results, right? When we, you know, it's one thing to do good and have it feel good. But, I mean, you can do hedonistic things and they feel good. But the thing is that the Buddha's saying in suttas like this when he talks about karma, it's not just that doing good feels good, it's that it creates good, right? So it's bright actions with bright results. So the bright action and then the bright result, it flows out. And in a time like this when we see a lot of more oppressive political situations coming along and things like this, then it's extra helpful to reflect on our good choices. It's extra helpful to reflect on the wholesome things that we're doing, right, and that we are creating good, right? We're creating goodness and safety for the people who are around us. And this is the beautiful benefit of our virtue. And it's a choice that we make, right? If you've been doing it for a really long time, then maybe it just feels like second nature. And if that's the case, I really recommend that you do reflect on this as a choice that you've made for a really long time, right? It feels really different. You're actually like, oh, I am a good person. I've been keeping the precepts for a really long time. And again, this is like a powerful form of autonomy that you have of all, you know, all the different ways. It's rebellious, really. Like in this society where it's like, you know, you are encouraged to compete and get ahead and beat everyone at any cost, then keeping the precepts and being a safe person, being a kind person, being a gentle person is rebellious. So reflecting on that as a source of goodness and a source of powerfulness in your heart, right? And it might take a really long time, like it might take years of doing that reflection to help you see what a good person you are. But it's years of your life so well spent, right? It's such a beautiful way that you probably already choosing to live, and you may as well, as I was saying on Wednesday, collect the bonus interest, right? So these are bright actions with bright results. Can anyone guess what the dark actions with dark results are? Well, we know what the bright actions were.
Speech.
Yeah. Yeah. Breaking the five precepts. Right? These are and the other kinds of wrong speech. And also the Buddha will talk about having wrong view at death. So breaking the five precepts, and especially like breaking the five precepts and not and thinking it's okay, right? This is the wrong view part. Like sometimes we'll be like, I told a lie, and you actually reflect and be like, yeah, that feels dark, right? It created darkness. It created distrust within my relationships. You'll have that sense of remorse, that sense of shame that you did the thing that is not at the standard of that you would expect from yourself, right? You're like, this is wholesome. To have this kind of wholesome shame or this wholesome remorse that you've done something that goes against your ethical values. And being someone with confidence in their ethical values is so important. The world needs you right now, you good ethical people, you. It's really, yeah, it being able to have that wisdom and that reflection for when we have made mistakes is a, it's really, it is a superpower, I think, right? Because if we think about karma as creating conditions, so there had to be conditions before for you to break that precept, right? Like we were talking about with the elephant and the bandits in the elephant situation, right? So if you wound up in a situation where you compromised your ethics in some sort of way, it's not because you're a bad person. It's because the conditions that you were at that time were bad, right? If you have the power to reflect that, hey, I did that bad thing, it had a bad result, and these were the conditions that led me to doing that bad thing, then you can grow in wisdom, right? If you have a problem with gossiping, you know, one of the four kinds of wrong speech, then what are the situations where you're going to gossip, right? What led you to gossiping? You know, who were you hanging out with when the gossiping happened? I see some gossipers smiling, right? And it's not all situations. You know, same with like if you have a I have an anger problem kind of feeling going on, right? Some people you don't have an anger problem with, and some people, gosh, right? But so then you need to program your mindfulness. You need to program your awareness to not to be on the lookout for those situations. Like, what was the condition? I say this again and again, and I borrow this from 12 Step. Hungry, angry, lonely, tired, halt. Right? You can even think of the Buddha doing the stop sign Buddha, the traffic light Buddha, right? So they can be conditions that make us, who has ever got hangry, right? It's a thing. Hungry, angry. And so then you can have some wisdom for like, maybe it is just something. Oh, look, you know, I said those things. Sorry, I was just hungry. And I think everyone understands, yeah, sorry, I was just hungry, right? I mean, like, especially if you're a parent, you're like, you've been running around all day and you just haven't eaten. And so recognizing the conditions and hopefully setting up a success plan for another time so that your actions do not have dark results next time, right? And so this isn't then not the kind of thing that's going to send you to hell. And so this is why wrong view was in there, right? It's like people who are not willing to acknowledge and reflect that they have done, made bad choices, right? There are people who are like, oh, yeah, it doesn't matter. And they're carrying around a great big cloud of ignorance and delusion, which is going to continue to make them, continue to condition them to make more bad choices, right? And when our awareness is inclined to pain and hurt and greed and all those things, then hell seems like the logical place for us to wind up eventually, right? Because that's the kind of thing that happens in hell. But if you have the heart of a deva, you're kind and generous and gentle. Deva realm for you guys. So this is really like pretty obvious, right? The dark and bright deeds leading to the dark and bright results. So hopefully I've explained those kinds of things pretty clearly. But what are dark and bright deeds leading to dark and bright results, right? And is this grey deeds with grey results, or is this dark and bright deeds with dark and bright results? Now, this is a point of contention. I've spoken with Ajahn Brahmali. He reckons it's grey. Bhante Sujato, black and white. And reading through the different suttas, I tend to agree with Bhante Sujato, so I'm going to take that. I mean, like, I know this is his session, but I'd have no problems with disagreeing with him if I disagreed with him. He's not here, so I can just make my case, right? And he'd be like, Venerable Prasanna said this. Were they right? Okay, so I think the idea is that, okay, so dark and bright actions are things like our white lies, right? And I heard this in the questions at the truth discussion that you all had a few weeks ago. So I've got an example from something that happened recently at the Vihara. Some really lovely people who come regularly to offer a meal to me I ran into one of them on Pindapat one day, and she said to me, oh, we're going to do a surprise 70th birthday on Saturday for our auntie. She's a wonderful Dharma practitioner and we want to surprise her. And I was like, oh, that sounds lovely. And then when they came, they're like, oh, yeah, we've told her that we're doing a one-year death anniversary for our dog. They'd done the one-year death anniversary for the dog. I do kind of do dog death anniversaries. Cats are cool too, rabbits, whatever. We're doing a cat one, I think, on the weekend. So if you're a cat person, that's fine too. I animals are awesome. Anyway, so they brought this auntie along who clearly loved their dog and wanted to come and do the one-year death anniversary. And so then when I read out the dedication, she was really surprised and delighted, but when they went, what about the dog? It was really sweet. I was like, oh, what a lovely person. Right? And so this was a really, like, and everyone was really happy to celebrate this auntie. There was like 15 people there. I was like, wow, the dog's really loved. So mostly bright, but they did lie, right? They could have just said, Auntie, come along, we're doing some dana. Yeah? And so it's got a little bit of dark and it's separate from the light, right? There was a lot of light. It was the joy that was there. It was the offering dana. It was like so much light, so much light. It's not like these kind of, oh, wishy-washy gray area kind of things that most people come up with these
but there was a tiny little peppercorn of dark in there, right? It was the lie. They're like, next time someone invites them along to a dana, those people, they're like, I wonder if that's really what we're doing, right? And so this is the thing. And so the result is that there's that little seed of doubt in those the auntie and her daughter's mind that maybe that's what these people like, maybe they're, I mean, it's not a bad thing, right? And they obviously, like, very much cared for each other, and they're beautiful, beautiful people. So, you know, I'm not saying, you know, not saying this is a huge example. I'm actually saying it because it's such a, like, such a small example even, right? That you could see that there was a little bit of dark result as well, that seed of doubt that's now going to be sown in these people's minds. And when we, you know, tell a bigger white lie, there's even more of a seed of doubt in there, right? And, you know, if it's in a situation where we think, and the thing is, right, the intention was to lie. The intention was to lie. The intention was to deceive people. And this is the problem with our white lies, right, and other kind of black and white things. And this is why I think it's not gray, because there's the dark intention as well as the light intention, and they're not muddied. Who has ever told a white lie and not intentionally told a white lie? Right? Like, you know, these things that you think are gray areas, you know they're not. This is the cloud of delusion telling you it's just gray. I don't really know. Right? And this is why I disagree with Ajahn Brahmali. Ajahn Brahmali is like, yeah, but a lot of us, we don't know what our, what, you know, what's behind our, behind our actions. And so, but what we're talking about with karma is intention, right? We're talking about the intention behind the reasons that we do things. So, you know, it could be we want to make ourselves look great, and we have this kind of grandiose kind of greedy thing for praise or something like that. And that could be the little dark bit inside us doing an extra generous act, right? But we know that that's there. There are other times when we just do the extra generous act and there's no darkness there, right? We're not looking for praise. We're not looking for recognition. But we do know, right? And this is why I'm saying there's dark and bright. There's, you know, we could do something and it can have dark and bright in there, right? But we do know. We can trick ourselves into not knowing, just like the people who are just doing the dark deeds can trick themselves into thinking that they don't know. But you all know. If you look inside your heart and you really look at what was your motivation behind doing the thing, then you, you know, I think that you know. So that was kind of like, that's an interesting point that I hadn't thought about, and I'd come across, you know, I only started thinking about this in the last few months. And I thought, look, it's really, because before that I'd never read it as I'd read it as gray as well. But when I read Bhante Sujata's translation, I was like, oh, it's not gray. I'd thought it was gray for like 10 years. But as someone who is on a path of shining the light where the dark clouds of delusion are, this is the kind of thing that we need to be very honest with, right? This is part of our training. It's part of understanding our mind and our motivation behind doing things. And it can seem kind of like awkward and like scary to look in those dark places, and like, don't hang out there too long, guys. Just like have a little look. See, be gentle with it, right? Be kind with it. Do a bit of metta for yourselves. If you've done, if you're like, oh, I've still got like a bit of resentment hanging around. Yes. Right? And this is normal. Y'all ain't enlightened yet. Any of you? No. Okay, good. It's like that, right? So the important thing is to, it's, you know, coming back to what we were saying before the meditation, it's to water the flowers and not the weeds. It's to recognize the unwholesome states that have
arisen and cut them off to prevent more, to prevent unwholesome states that have arisen, to prevent unwholesome states from arising. This is the other kind of right effort, of the four right efforts. So there's lots of fours today. Four. So they're the two to do when unwholesome states have happened, right? When these dark states have happened. One is to pull out the weeds. The other one is to put mulch down so that the weeds don't grow, right? Not violent, very gentle. Very gentle, but just doing those things that prevent, you know, maybe move that jacaranda tree or trim the branch back so you don't get little jacaranda seedlings popping up everywhere. That kind of thing, right? Doing the little things because you know that there's cause and effect, right? So it's just preventing those unwholesome states from arising, those dark states from arising. And then there is the bright side, right, of the four right efforts, which is cultivating the wholesome states, right? Finding out what are the causes for these wholesome states to arise. Hanging out with good friends, good cause for wholesome states to arise, right? Practicing meditation, good way to stop you getting cranky, good way for wholesome states to arise. Those kinds of things, right? You can look into cause and effect. Like when you just had a really good day, investigate why, because it'd be really nice if you all had more good days, right? If you had more good interactions with that difficult person, why was it? All those things, right? It's cause and effect. It's not luck, right? It's not your good karma. It's your good karma, right? Use your wisdom to see what the conditions are, right? What are your optimum operating temperatures? And then when you have these good things happening in your life, don't let them pass away, right? I noticed this with meditation, especially when I was doing kind of like the long three-month retreats, was that I'd be meditating, say, from 5 in the morning right through till like 10 in the morning, and then it'd be time to get ready to head for lunch. And so I'd walk down the hill and slowly my mindfulness would be like, I wonder who brought food. I wonder if there's that nice pizza I like. Maybe that person will bring their homemade noodles, right? And slowly, I mean, they're not like, I'm going to kill this person thoughts, but they're kind of disrupting the peace, right? My mind was all beautiful and bright and gentle, and I'm just like not guarding it. I'm not putting a fence around that, right? I'm not protecting it. And, you know, 40 minutes later when I'm back at my heart, I'm like, I'm going to start again now. I mean, yes, it does accumulate, right? Over weeks and weeks and weeks. Don't worry, Nalushi, it will accumulate. But it would have been so much wiser if I had put like a little safety fence around my mind, if I just programmed my mindfulness just to don't worry about it. You're going to just pick up some food that's going to get your foot through for the next day. Find something that's going to like be right for your digestion, right? Like just setting up those conditions and protecting your mindfulness. Now, in a day-to-day situation for all y'all, if you're doing your meditation, when that timer goes off on your phone, what do you do next? Okay, right? Don't go straight to WhatsApp. Don't go straight to Reddit. Don't go straight to Instagram. Definitely don't go straight to TikTok. That thing will fry your brain. Right? Guard your peace, even for 5 minutes. Grab a cup of tea, right? Go and have, you know, a real human conversation with one of your peoples or your cat or your dog or your bunny. You know, make those, just stretch it out just a little bit, right? You earned it. Whatever peace you've earned in your meditation, protect it and guard it as long as you can. This doesn't mean walking around with like a zombie all day, right? It's not like, you know, you don't have to be doing the Mahasi thing all day. Be normal. but be peaceful. Okay, be normal, but be peaceful. Like at the end of your meditation, you can, you know, when you dedicate the merits, may I, you can also set the intention to, may I be mindful and peaceful, you know, may this continue. When you start your day and you're heading off to work, you can set this intention, may I be mindful and may I be peaceful, right? So these are ways that we can protect our goodness, right? This is part of the four right efforts. So we've talked about dark actions. We've talked about bright actions with bright results. We've talked about dark and bright actions and dark and bright results and why they may not be grey. And then the fourth one, right? The fourth one is neither bright nor dark actions with neither bright nor dark results. What? Now, this all comes within a framework of Indian thought, which is called a tetralemma, right? So here in the West, we're used to dilemmas. It's either A or B, right? But in Buddhist thought and in Indian thought more broadly, I think there's this idea of black, white, black and white, and neither black or white, right? And what this opens up to is complexity, right? So like when we were talking about the little bit of pepper in the salt of our dark and bright deed, or bright and dark deed, hopefully, it's the complexity of being human, right? It's what it's like in the world. When we have this kind of rigid thinking that it has to be this way, right? It's this way or it's not going to work out. And I'm not talking about our ethical choices, but just the way that things, you know, things happen in the world, then we're missing the opportunity for nuance. We're missing the opportunity for detail. This is like a lot of the politics that we're seeing in the world right now are very conservative. Like it has to be this way. Everyone has to have their roles and fit into their boxes because you're easy to control when you do that. Right? It's about controlling. It's about making things a certain way. It's about power and things like that. So bringing the idea of black, you know, nuanced thinking, the option for, you know, maybe it could be a little bit of A and a little bit of B. It's like, oh, I have to choose option A or I have to choose option B. Why not have both? Or why not have neither, right? These are options that you can have when you're like, I've got to make this really difficult life-changing decision. And I had this, right? I had, you know, I was trying to make this really big, difficult decision a couple of years ago. And I was like, oh, I have to either do this or this, and it's going to totally change everything I do in my life. Another monastic said, why don't you try both? And I was like, oh, that's a genius idea, right? You just need a friend to be like, why don't you try both? Or here's plan D, right? So, you know, just offering that up as part of this idea of the tetralemma as well. You know, it doesn't necessarily fit within the ethics part of what I'm talking about, but I think it's also important to bring up. And so the last one, what is this? Neither bright nor dark deeds with neither bright nor dark results. And then it gave the example of this being the Eightfold Path. Now, this is because the Eightfold Path is the only way to end all karma and not have new karma, right? This is how the arahant is not born again, right? They have no more inclinations. They've let go of all the things that, all the ignorance that keeps making them make silly choices. That's like all about me, right? All these ideas that, because that's why we do things, right? It's because we want to exist. It's because we want to move forward in the world, because we want to get things. And so understanding, you know, that our actions have effects, then we have a different choice, right? Like, so the second factor of the Eightfold Path, which Bhante is now translating as right purpose, and the three kinds of right purpose are the purpose of, I need a whiteboard. is renunciation, kindness, and gentleness, right? It's a very different kind of purpose from the way that we move through the world. And it's the kinds of things that do not create a sense of self, right? So it's the path that eventually leads to, by practicing the Eightfold Path, it's the path that leads to the ending of karma, because each of those steps, each of those choices that we make along the way lead to letting go of that sense of self. It leads to the letting go of that delusion, that dark cloud that covers our choices, right? And so the Arahant is one who has no more pulling forward. They're not leaning even towards doing the good, right? They're just done. It's like the cat, like the flame who has gone out, the person who is fully enlightened. Nibbana, it's not a place, right? If I said to you, turn off the light switch, where did the light go? It's just gone, right? It hasn't run off into the small stuffy room that we sometimes use. It's gone. So this is what Nibbana is. It's like there's no more electricity running through the causes for rebirth. Right? There's nothing causing us to be reborn. And so that is the neither bright nor dark deeds with neither bright nor dark results. This is the transcendent path, right? It's the fourth one. And so it's something I wanted to say. I'm just checking I've got it because we're running out of time. So it's like that free from a self, right? Free from a confusion about which is the right way to go, which is the right way to act, right? Until you're free from that, you're still going to be winding up in those three things, right? You're still going to be winding up sometimes bright, sometimes dark, sometimes speckled. Gray doesn't work, so I guess we're going with speckled. So there's that confusion in our mind about what is good. But even like the stream enterer, right? If those of you who are traditional Buddhists, it's like it says in the Ratna Sutta that one who is a stream enterer can no longer break the five precepts without instantly confessing it, right? So they know the difference, right? They know the difference between bright and dark. They have no little clouds that are going, yeah, no one will find out. And this is just more and more attenuated as that sense of self disappears through the different levels of enlightenment, right? The sense of self is linked to greed, hatred, and delusion, right? So as the greed, hatred, and delusion disappear, the judging, the evaluating on a personal level disappears as well, right? And so this is how there is neither bright nor dark deeds with neither bright nor dark results. Now, this is really difficult to understand, and we probably need to do a whole Dharma talk on the Arahant, so you can hit Bhante up for that one next week. But, I think that was pretty much what I wanted to cover for those for this idea of the tetralemma in terms of karma. But if there was anything I didn't explain well or you would like more information, now is your time. Yes, Kanel, yep.
Thank you for your wonderful Dharma talk. So it's regarding how our mind gets affected by the influences of other people.
Right.
So like many people, not unique to me,
yeah,
I often get over sensitive to people who say critical things about you.
Yep.
It affects the monkey mind.
Yep.
I have a couple of family members who have this ability,
yep,
to not be affected by other people's emotions.
Yep.
Is there a way of cultivating that and still maintaining your compassion?
Yes. Yes.
By creating like a shield where you will not be affected by negative emotion, but you can still feel the love and compassion of others as well.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think like being able to cultivate self-respect through kind and gentle action and reflecting on your kind and gentle action will mean that it's easier for you, right? So Ajahn Chah talks about this. If someone calls you a dog, turn around and check if you've got a tail, right? You don't have a tail, you're not a dog, don't worry about it. But if you're not reflecting the fact that you're not a dog all the time, then someone calls you a dog and you're like, oh, they must be right. Yeah? But so this is why reflecting on your good qualities, reflecting on the kind things and the gentle things that you've done throughout the day can make a really, really big difference, right? So, like, if you don't have the habit of doing this reflection, then, you know, this is something you can do to help you reinforce the good things that you're already doing and incline towards doing more good things, right? So you can even say, look, set yourself homework of, like, coming up with three good things that you've done during the day. You came to a Dhamma talk, that's one. you had a nice conversation with Sinsin and Jia, but so that's two. Okay.
Oh, I noticed.
I noticed, right? So I'll leave you to come up with the third one, but I reckon you've got at least three. So there you go. Sorry. Okay. Sinsin. Yep.
I'm just trying to think of possible examples of grey ones. I mean, I know that you gave us examples of
speckled ones. Yep.
Would there be a grey one, like true, purely grey? I'm just thinking, I don't know if examples, I think that crosses my mind, but maybe it's not right. But
yeah.
Let's say a friend says, do I smell? Maybe you can have a shower or something.
Well, your intention was to be kind and also tell them to have a shower, so that's not grey, right? Yeah. I can't think of one, right? You've got one, okay.
And I didn't want to do that.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to say that to her because I didn't want to offend her. So I said to her that I was busy, which I feel a little bit ick.
Right? So that's the dark result.
She doesn't.
Yeah.
She's fine.
Yeah.
And we'll do it another time.
Yeah. So the dark result is that icky feeling, right?
But I sort of feel good as well.
Right? And that's the bright.
I didn't say that.
Yeah, right. So I'm not, you know, I'm not judging the way that you did it, but I'm saying that the fact that you went actually reflects that your good character in noticing that there was that little bit of darkness in that. It was two things, right? Because you just said to me, a part of me felt this little cringe, right? And a part of me was like, oh, I did this really nicely. And I agree, right? But they're separate. I mean, there's a tiny speck, like there's one peppercorn in your bowl of salt or sugar or whatever, right? It's not like really speckly, right? I don't think it's very grey at all. I think it's very white with a little bit of dark. Yeah. Hey, come on, try and shoot me down with a grey one. I knew this is where we were going. Yeah. Yes. Oh, yes.
I felt like, oh, I'm torturing her.
Yep.
But I needed
to be
a
part of
medicine. Yep. And, like, part of me felt like, oh, I'm torturing her.
Yep.
And at the same time, I know that I need to
feed
her because
she needs
medicine.
Okay.
So is that, like,
grey? It's not grey. Your intention was to feed Twinkle her medicine so she was healthy, right? You're good. You had no intention to hurt her and you would have done everything. I know you and I know Twinkle and I know that you had no intention to hurt Twinkle. Okay. Well, it is all about intention, right?
I disagree. Because,
yep.
Because, like, so for instance,
Yeah.
My daughter had her friend over, and my daughter is heterosexual. My daughter's friend is gay, but he's not yet come out.
Yeah.
My husband.
Should we like turn off the microphone at this point or what? I'm like, are we doing the same? Okay. Yeah.
He mentioned something about gay or whatever, and he told me, like,
yeah,
I found out later that he had this conversation, and
yeah,
I was like, don't say that in front of
this person,
this
yeah,
person,
yeah.
You know? And he's like, oh, but my intention wasn't to, you know, offend him,
yeah,
or ostracize him or whatever,
yeah,
because my intention was good, and I'm like, no, but.
The result was kind of like this, right? Yeah.
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 Like, it can still be offensive or isolated.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So. Right. Yes. Yes. Yeah. But I think, like, you know, if your husband had thought about the fact that he wasn't meant to say that, like, if he didn't know that he wasn't meant to say that, it's very different from knowing that he.
But shouldn't he know not to say that? And that's my daughter and mine.
Okay. I'm not settling family debates. I'm not giving advice on cars. I'm not settling family debates. Okay. Okay.
Confusion,
right? Yeah, confusion. Yeah. Yeah, it's that confusion about what's right and wrong. And the confusion is a dark state in itself, right? Because it's delusion. Yeah. Right? Confusion's a really dark state. Like, no one likes feeling confused. Yeah. 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 But I think, like, when we do those things and then we realize it was a bad thing, like it had some darkness in it, then we know that it was a bright and dark action. It wasn't a bright action that had dark results. Like the Buddha doesn't say that there are bright actions with dark results. This is the thing, right? And so whatever we call that thing, whether we call it gray like Ajahn Pramali, or we call it black and white or like Bhante, or we call it speckled, we know like bright actions don't have dark results, right? So. Okay, sure, can I help? Yes.
Okay. You brought up a really interesting point. So I'm doing a research project in Buddhism. In China, you had certain Buddhist monasteries during the Tang Dynasty period of the Huayan, Chan, and Yulan traditions that used to staff their farms with slaves.
Yep.
The logic was that these slaves had attained negative karma, and as a consequence, they became slaves, and that these monasteries were doing them a favor to purify their karma by keep them as slaves.
Oof. And I this is one of the sutras I didn't get to today, even, right? So the idea, there's a sutta in Sanghita Nikaya. I can't remember what it was, sorry. But it talks about this, right? There are people who are born into, like, dark places, unfortunate places, right? They're born as slaves, or they're born as, like, corpse funeral peoples. All those things, right? And then there are those who make good choices and move in ethical directions, right? And there are those who continue along a dark path and continue to move in a dark direction. And so this is the difference. And so keeping slaves is bad. It's wrong livelihood.
I don't
yeah.
support those views.
Yeah. Yeah, so I think, you know, that's what the Buddha actually explains, is like whatever situation, and then it talks about people who are born into like heaps wealthy situations, right? And they make bad choices and they wind up in bad, you know, with a bad rebirth, right? They kill, they steal, they rip everyone off. We know there are rich people like this, right? But there are also really great wealthy people who, you know, do good things and practice the Dhamma and live ethically and make ethical choices. And we know these people too, right? And so this is the thing. It's by purifying your own action that you can get out of those situations. The monastery cannot purify mm-hmm. their action, and they're making terrible choices and using delusion and weaponizing Dhamma and weaponizing Kamma to justify it. So not good. Sin, sorry, you were going to say something. What was his reason? He said intention is action, and so we're not very clear about our intentions. Right? And so, you know, so like it's something to keep reflecting on in our own minds about how clear our intentions are. Hey. Yep.
Like, for example, I have a friend, a cat got sick.
Yep.
And then because she was young, she didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
She took Panadol to feed the cat.
Oh, no.
She has the best
intention. Right. Yeah. Right. I mean, like, we can't save the world either. This is the thing. We can have all the great intentions, but sometimes things are going to go wrong. But it doesn't have the same ethical impact on, like, it wasn't a moral choice that she made, right? It was, you know, she'll have maybe a certain amount of regret, but she won't, it doesn't affect her moral character in the same way as well. Yeah. It yielded a dark result, but it does, yeah. And I think, like, the thing is that when we get to the end of our life, and this comes to the question kind of that Moo's kind of put in here, Moo said, like, it's interesting because I mentioned about wrong view at death, right? And what our mind is like at our death is we're going to look back on the choices we've made and the ethical choices we made. So that wasn't an ethical choice that your friend made, right? It was, or if it was, it was a wholesome ethical choice, right? And so the dark results that we're talking about are like the whole life kind of inclination. It's like how are our internal accounting system works out, right? Because, you know, it's a person who made a whole lot of bad choices, right? Angulimala. Right, our friend Angulimala, who laid waste to towns and villages, whole countries, and wore their fingers as a necklace. Right, serial killer, famous arahant, became enlightened,
and it,
Angulimala.
Sorry about that.
Yeah. So he was able to fully let go of those things. He was able to recognize those things and put them down and purify and eventually become neither bright nor dark karma that has neither bright nor dark results. He fully transcended through the Eightfold Path, but it was through that renunciation, through that letting go, that he was able to do that, and through cultivating wisdom, right? So your friend who fed the cat the Panadol, she cultivated a lot of wisdom through that, right? Like, she learned the hard way, but she, yeah, right? So that's part of the path. What's my stance on abortion? We've got a whole other Dharma talk. It's absolutely a black and white thing. It's not. Yeah, it's so complicated, right? And I think it's definitely one of those black and white things. It's not all black and it's not ever going to be white, right? Because I know friends who've had abortions, and I don't know a single one who doesn't have a little bit of black from that, right? Doesn't matter what the situation was that they wound up in that situation, you know. It's there, but it doesn't mean it wasn't, like, suitable for their situation at their time, right? And I'm never going to criticize anyone's choice to do that, right? And people should have autonomy over their bodies. And there are so many different reasons that people wind up in those situations, right? And they can overcome that darkness through kindness and gentleness for themselves, right? They don't have to carry around whatever darkness sits in their heart from making that choice, right? It's through, you know, if Angulimala can lay waste to an entire country, then someone who has had to go through an abortion can also redeem themselves, right? Can see themselves as a good person and as a kind person, as a gentle person, right? So that's really, really important. And, you know, I even know monastics who've had that before and stuff. So it's totally possible. Okay, look, I think I've probably run out of results and I haven't answered Moo's run out of time and I haven't answered Moo's question very well. But thank you all for joining and, yeah, thank you. Sorry.